magazine they put out in Canton. I'm not sure it's even being published right now.
Oh, yes, there was a
kind of... I wrote and refuted it because of the magazine.
That was okay.
And that was incorrect. It was badly done and had no... I didn't know if you wanted to. It had no basis in fact, and I wrote a letter and gave them the true facts.
Well, that's good.
Which they published.
Well, now...
But I'd like to have a copy of that.
I'll see that you get it very quick. Now, some of the points in here, I wondered if we could elaborate on a little bit. For instance, now you never lived in the castle.
Oh, yeah, I did. We spent almost every winter up there. My grandmother packed up and would move south, either to Florida or Arizona.
Yeah.
And we moved in and stayed there until spring. When she returned, we went home.
Sure, that would have been, right. And then when the letter says, Grandfather died suddenly in September 1897. In his will, a larger share was left to Father than the other brothers. He apparently believed Father to have more ability than the others. This is your grandfather.
He's speaking about my great-grandfather, Thomas R. Morgan. When he died, he left the bulk of his estate to William H. Sr., my father's father.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. But the grandfather referred to here is your great-grandfather.
T.R., yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say that his only daughter, Margaret, then Mrs. Willis Ramsey, whose husband was Treasurer Morgan Engineering, also fared better. So, as might be expected, a family row erupted. John, Tom, and Arthur sold out, and Edwin stayed. Father became president, Willis Ramsey, vice president, treasurer. Could you indicate... Did the family move geographically? Were they all separated by that time?
Yes. Now, this was never discussed until my father was in the hospital many years later. And I mentioned to him that I had seen in a law book on wills and trusts a landmark case of the Morgan family. And I asked him about it. It was my grandfather, T.R.'s will, which was contested. And... he laughed about it and told me about it. Now, I know that Edwin stayed with Morgan Engineering for a while, but they got into a row eventually and he left. He went to Pittsburgh and he started Wellman Morgan Sievers, which then became Wellman Engineering Company.
Right.
He died without children, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
He's buried in the mausoleum, he and his wife. Now. Arthur went to Dayton, Ohio, and started Morgan Construction Company down there. I don't know whatever became of him.
Right.
I suppose he died in time. Whether he had children or not, I don't know.
Right.
John, I believe, went to New York, and I don't know what he did. He may have gone to Chicago. There's some question there. I met a son of his some years ago, but he was not real clear about this. Apparently there were several divorces and a lot of ill feeling in the family. But I got the impression that when he left Alliance, he probably went to Chicago first.
Right.
He had two boys.
Right,
let's see, no, that would be Tom. I beg your pardon. That's Tom Morgan.
Right.
John, I know nothing about John at all. I have no idea what became of him.
That's so. Well, now, you say that the one was buried in the mausoleum.
Several of them are.
What is the mausoleum you're referring to?
Out here at the Alliance City Cemetery.
Yeah.
They built a rather large mausoleum. I think it's based on the Taj Mahal.
All right. Now, your father... then was in the castle, and your father and mother, until 1939?
That's right.
And the Elks purchased it?
That's right.
And at that time, then, the home across the street?
We built it.
Yeah.
It was built in 1940.
Tell me about your personal recollections of living in the castle.
Well, I remember it clearly, of course, because I hate to admit my age, but I was 9 years old when my grandmother sold the house.
Right.
So I remember it well. And as I said, not only did we spend every winter there, But also, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother there, you know, just visiting her. We were very close. But it was, as a small child, until I started school, I thought people lived in big houses. I didn't really think much of it. It was just my grandmother's house. And it wasn't until I started school that schoolmates began to talk about it, that I began to realize that it was a little bigger than the average home. Well, it was far bigger than our home.
What school did you go to?
I started in Parkway School. And then when we moved on to Glamorgan, I went to South Lincoln.
Did you ever bring any of your classmates to the
home? Oh, yes, good many of them. We lived in on Ridgewood, up at the end, at 2806 Ridgewood. And we lived there, and our house was rather small. When we closed it up, and my mother would take the nursemaid and the cook, and we moved into the big house every winter. And, I had a lot of schoolmates that went up and played with me up there. I don't think there are too many left in Alliance, actually.
Well, now, let me get this straight again. You were at the castle in the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
Because?
My grandmother went south.
All right. But she was living in it alone?
Oh, yes, alone. From my father, my grandfather died in 1926, I believe. In 27, my father lived there with her until he married in 1929. He married my mother and moved up to Ridgewood.
All right.
And I was born in 1930.
When your grandmother lived there alone, how many servants or how much help did she have?
She had a cook and a maid and a chauffeur. That was it. We had a night watchman, but he worked only at night. He had a job down at Morgan Engineering, I think later, but he worked nights. He patrolled both the grounds and the house.
Well, I can see from this that he says in here that 1905, father lived, died in March of 1928.
Oh, he did. I thought he died in 27.
That's your grandfather.
Yeah.
And then your father continued to live there.
Yeah.
So your marriage in the fall of 29.
Right.
His marriage in the fall of 29. Now, do you have any recollections of any incidents, stories, encounters during that time from 1905 to 1928 that your grandfather and grandmother lived there? That is to say, for example, did any strangers come and say, "Oh, we've heard about this place. Could we have a tour?"
No, not really. But I think that we had a lot of break-ins.
Did you?
Yes, a lot of theft. Not just necessarily break-ins, but some of the help from time to time unloaded a room at a time.
Oh.
We had a lot of trouble with theft. But considering the size of the house, it was no wonder that people took things because they could get in and out really without being detected.
When your grandfather lived there, how many children were there?
Only my father. He was an only child.
All right. So there were three people.
Yes.
And then when he passed, then it was your father and your mother and your grandmother for
yes.
about a year.
Yeah.
And then she was there alone.
That's right.
For about a 10-year period.
Yeah, that's right. Till 1939. She moved out in the fall of 39. I believe in November.
To go back to 1897 and the will with John, Tom, Arthur, and Margaret, had they all lived in the house?
None of them.
None had?
No, Margaret's husband built the house that is at the end of Overlook, that faces Overlook.
The Ramsey
yes.
house, which was the fraternity.
Her husband built that. In many ways, the interior of that was very much like the big house, very much like it. The general layout of the rooms and so forth was very reminiscent of it.
Now, it is noted here that the architect from Cleveland had designed a number of other places in Alliance. Did he have any special tie-in with Alliance that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, no. He was from Cleveland, His daughter still lives in Cleveland. They were good friends of my parents. The daughter. Not that I know of. I think he must have done the Ramsey house. I'm not sure, but I feel certain he must have. It's so definitely on the same lines. And I believe that he may have done a house for Edwin Morgan. Somebody told me that a few years ago. I really don't know, nor do I know where it was.
Edwin Morgan?
Yes.
What's the relationship there?
He would have been my grandfather's brother.
And where did he live?
I really don't know. Okay. Some of the older members of Alliance would know that.
Was it in Alliance?
Yes.
I see. Well, let's go back to the Sabbath. When your great-grandfather came, Thomas Rees Morgan,
yes.
Right? And he came from Wales.
That's right.
Then in 1832, and he passed in 1905, was that it?
That's right.
He builds the castle.
No, he didn't build it. W.H. built it. Thomas Rees didn't build it.
It was the
son of Thomas Rees, William H. Yeah. Senior, who built the house.
Yes. And in...
But 1903, 4.
I think maybe about finished. Said our family moved in before Thanksgiving 1905.
Yes.
In that era. Total cost of $400,000. Is that a figure you'd heard?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. I imagine that was probably pretty close to what it cost.
And what did it sell for in 1939?
$25,000. Land and all. The whole thing.
How much land?
Well, I believe there was 50 acres in the original grant there, that original piece, but I'm not even certain of that.
Now, but nobody came during those years of between 1905 and 1928 to research the castle or...
Oh, I would imagine people must have come, but I would not have been aware of it. Unlike a normal size home, if someone came to the door, unless I happened to be in the hall, the front hall for some reason, I would never know that anybody came to the house.
All right, now when somebody came, to which entrance did they come?
The front door.
The front door?
Yes, uh-huh. That would be the one that you come into from the porte cochere on the side there.
Yes.
And as I say, there was a long entrance hall, which is still there,
yes,
into the rotunda. So unless I happened to be in that immediate vicinity, I would never have known anybody even came to the house. We had a cook. When we lived there, we had a cook and a maid, our own. My grandmother took her cook and her maid with her to her wherever she was spending the winter.
And you had a bedroom upstairs?
Yes. Yes, mine was on the side above the porte cochere. I had a room there. It was originally a guest suite. There were two bedrooms and a bath adjoining off of a hall there. And those lines are completely obliterated today. The Elks tore out all the partitions and put a bar in up there. And it's difficult to tell where those rooms were, although I can tell where they are by the windows.
Mm-hmm.
But my room was small. It had one single bed in it and a desk and a couple chairs and a table, and it had a little fireplace, which I loved.
Oh, my.
Now, originally, when I was very small, my crib was in my grandmother's bedroom. I don't know. Well, when my grandfather died, he had a bedroom connected to the long bathroom and then my grandmother's bedroom. And when he died, she made his bedroom into a sitting room. And we spent most of our time there rather than in the living room, which was very large. The sitting room had a fireplace in it, and it was a fairly good-sized room.
Now, was the living room the one to the...
To the left when you come into the rotunda.
Yeah. And where was the sitting room then?
Second floor.
Oh, I was second floor.
And we spent most of our time there. That was like our living room. We spent most of our time there, and it had a fireplace in it. And that was essentially our living room. And as I say, when I was very small, my crib was in my grandmother's bedroom. And then later, when I got bigger, I was moved into the small bedroom.
Did you have any idea of the cost of maintenance, heat? And thought.
No, but I do know that it took 2 train carloads of coal a winter to heat the house.
Two train carloads
of coal. The furnace had to be fired all night, which was one of the reasons why we had a night watchman, was to keep the furnace fired. It took a lot of coal.
Now, upstairs, on that level, there's some drawings by the cartoonist.
Yes.
Do you know about those and
yes.
how they came to be? Could you tell us that?
He worked briefly in Alliance. I'm not sure. I believe he worked at Alliance Machine. And he later in life, when he became a famous cartoonist, he used to draw cartoons, and a lot of them had familiar places. I know he had one that had a fence that said Morgan Engineering on it.
When were those put on the walls?
Merrick Lewis put those on when they had that as their office.
That would have been in,
50s. Yeah, somewhere in there.
All right. But there was nothing like that when you were there.
No.
So how were the...
This is the furniture.
Is this it? All right, I was just going to ask. I'm looking here at the beautiful draperies and wondering if that might...
I have a book of pictures of the house as it was, and I can't lay my hands on it now. I don't know what's happened to it. My son probably knows where it is. I better find it. I'm very upset about it. But... I remember quite clearly, you know, how the living room was laid out and so forth. And this couch sat in front of their 3 windows when you come in on the right-hand side. First, there are 2 little windows up high. There was a grand piano down in front of those. And next to it, right beside the door, as you enter the living room, stood that clock, the great big grandfather clock.
Off the rotunda.
Yeah. And then the... There was a couch, the 2 end tables, and a coffee table, and 2 chairs on either side of it.
Was there a great deal of entertaining that went on?
Yes, a great deal. Both my grandfather and my grandmother were very gregarious and enjoyed a good time and had a lot of friends. They entertained extensively, and my parents did, too.
Were these people mostly from Alliance, or were there a number from out of town?
Oh, I think both. We entertained a lot when we lived in that house. They used to get some brilliant ideas. I remember one time Dad and Mother had a dancing school instructor from Alliance came up and taught a tap class at night.
Oh.
When I, in the ballroom upstairs, and I didn't get much sleep.
Well, no, a tap class?
Yeah.
How many people?
Well, I don't know how many, where I could find out. There's a lady in town that was there, and she'd remember quite clearly.
But this is above your
business. A bunch of their friends, and they were up in the ballroom. Well, you could hear them tapping all over the house. They seemed to have a good time up at that.
About what year would that be?
Oh, I imagine about 1935, long in there.
In that time of depression, was there any change in the activity of the castle?
It never had a full complement of help, servants. We only had the chauffeur, his wife, and they had a son. She helped out in the house. I think she did ironing primarily. She helped out in the house. And he drove the car, and he also mowed the lawns in the summertime. And in the winter, he fired the furnace and did odd jobs around the house. There was a...
Did
this is over
the
top.
House?
They lived in an apartment above the garage, which is on Glamorgan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The other... There were 2 apartments on the second floor. The other one was empty. It was never occupied. Then in the house, we had a cook and a maid. And I had a nursemaid when I was little. They didn't dare let me out of their sight. I was afraid I wasn't the best child in the world.
Oh, is that so?
No.
Well, now, how many others in the family?
Just myself. I was an only child. I had a brother. He died when he was 4. Well, I was not quite 5, and he was not quite 4 when he died. And I think that we were a handful, and I know I was later on, but the house was a wonderful place to play hide-and-go-seek and also to get in trouble.
Hide-and-go-seek? Tell me, where would you go and hide?
Well, now...
It must have been...
I don't know that you ought to include this, really, in this talk, but you understand, my grandparents' friends were a lot of them in Akron. And Their best friends were probably the Sawfields, the Cyberlings, and that whole tribe, who were all related, of course. And I grew up with a good many of those kids from Akron. And on Sundays, we used to take turns going to the various homes for Sunday dinner, and then we kids played hide-and-go-seek. This was a big thing with us.
Wherever you were, if you were at the castle here or at Cyberlings in Akron?
We were at Stan Hewitt, of course. And then there was a woman by the name of Mrs. Manton. Her husband was in Robinson Clay Products, and her children married into the Sawfield and the Cyberling families. And they were related to everybody. And she had a magnificent home on the corner of Portage Path, North Portage Path, and Market, which had since been torn down. But that house was a lot of fun to play in. That was a good one for hide-and-go-seek. Of course, Stan Hewitt was marvelous, and our place was not too bad. But
the statement here by your father says that Stan Hewitt in Akron is an English manor house outside and in, but Glamorgan resembled a castle on the outside, but certainly not on the inside.
That's right. Inside, it was simply a lovely home. You were not aware at all that it was anything out of the ordinary, except that the rooms were pretty good size. But it was very much a comfortable home. It was beautifully done, very well decorated. Quite a lovely home, warm. It's a nice place.
The winter time when you were a youngster coming in from outside, did they tell you, now clean off your shoes before you come
in? Oh, I imagine so. There was a room that was, they called it the office. It was right to the right as you come in the front door.
Yes.
That was known as the cloak room, and we always left our boots and coats and so forth there. And I got into a lot of trouble up there. Well, I was little, you know, and imaginative. We had a girl. Most years, there would be a student from Mount Union College that was taking organ lessons, and they would come up and practice on the organ. And I know that for one winter, I knew that I wasn't allowed to touch the organ except when there was somebody there. Then my mother or my father would turn it on. It was electric. Now, there was this open switch. I believe they call them a knife switch underneath. And it would spark when you turned it on. It scared me. I was afraid of it. And I supposed it threatened me with, they'd say, don't ever touch that. You could get electrocuted, see.
I see.
Well, I knew that you didn't mix the water with electricity, but I thought I'd give her a little jolt. The girl would practice, and I had a little watering can, and I'd go and fill it with water, and I'd give her a little dribble every now and then, and she'd look up and, of course, wonder. And I finally got caught and got spanked for it. But I think that at that time, that girl must have thought for years the roof leaked like a sieve in that house.
Continue here. I see you're telling personal stories there.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Dreadful.
Is there anything to this matter of the, as your father says here, his grandfather, Thomas Rees Morgan, had his right leg amputated by a mine car?
Yes.
Was there any way in which that was a factor in his becoming a machinist?
Oh, yes.
And getting involved in machinery and so on? Could you
elaborate
Definitely. On that a bit?
Yes, he was hurt in a mine accident. Now, I'm not just sure how old he was. Does my father say anything about his
11.
Age? 11, okay. But there are several stories. One is that he was 11, the other that he was 14. Evidently, because he was hurt. Now, you know that education was compulsory in Wales way back. Now, education was compulsory in Wales. I believe back in the end of the 18th century. At any rate, they taught the children to read and write, and then they went to work in the mines. And because he was hurt, he went on with his education and then was given a job by the company in the machine shop, where he became a machinist. And I'm sure that this is probably the primary reason why he got out of the mines and became then a foreman and so forth.
Well,
he had a magnificently inventive mind.
And was that a factor in the building of the empire, shall I say?
Oh, yes. When he came to this country, he was married and he had a bunch of children.
Yeah.
They came over here. My grandfather was born shortly after they arrived here. And he went to Pittsburgh and worked, and then to, I think he was in Pittston and Johnstown.
Yes.
And he invented the steam hammer. And he invented a great many things over the years. He got a land grant on the railroad out here in Alliance and came to Alliance. Set up shop with a man by the name of Marchand, and it was Marchand and Morgan. Now they.
What do you mean by a land grant on the railroad?
I think the government gave land out if you would build a factory on it. And that's how he happened to get to Alliance, which was on the Fort Wayne-Pittsburgh main line of the Pennsylvania Railroad. And he came then and invented a great many things. And of his children, only my grandfather had that inventive streak in him. And he also was very, he had a lot of good ideas. And that between them, my grandfather, T.R., invented the overhead crane. My grandfather helped him wire it and made it the first electric overhead traveling crane. And without that piece of equipment, I doubt that the steel industry could ever have got as big as it did get.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly something would have come up sooner or later, but he did a magnificent job early on.
I noticed that your father says of his father, he never did anything on a small scale.
No, he didn't. He really didn't. He invented most of the sugar refining equipment for American Sugar Refining Company. And he gave it to him, and in return he got 2 trips to Puerto Rico.
Mm.
But he invented a lot of things down at Morgan Engineering.
Well, now, talking about your grandfather, how about the title of colonel?
He received that from the governor of the state of Ohio. It was an honorary title, which they used to hand out, like they still hand out, Kentucky colonels, but kind of an honorary thing.
Was this something that he did for the governor?
I think, no, it was more his contributions to the betterment of the state of Ohio.
I see.
That's the reason he got it.
So he was not a colonel in the armed forces?
No, it was an honorary title, but one of which he was very proud. They didn't give too many of them out.
Do you recall anything your father saying about the trials and tribulations of building the castle?
No, apparently things ran fairly smoothly while it was under construction. There were a lot of problems later on with it. The sheer size of it caused problems. It had a bad leak one time in the bathroom upstairs, and it poured down through the living room, and they couldn't get the water shut off. They couldn't find the right valves to get it shut off, and they finally had to get the city to turn the water off at that end of town.
Speaking of water, when were the lakes put there?
The first lake, I believe, at Glamorgan, was dug to get clay for the bricks for the foundation of the house. It was kind of a clay pit. And I believe the middle one, too, but not as much. The first lake they really did. There was water in the far one. That would be the one
further
south.
Oh, further south. Right?
Yes. There was some water in it. It was a stream that ran through there. And later on, after the house was complete, there was a house down in front on Union Avenue. It was a farm, small farm. The people refused to leave there.
Oh, you mean there was a home on Union
Avenue? Yes, on
Union
Avenue, right in front of the castle, right in front of that middle lake. And my grandfather wanted to make a lake out of that. I think it was just a stream running through there.
Right.
He wanted to buy that place and make a lake out of it and, you know, plant grass and fix it up. And the people wouldn't sell. In the early pictures of the castle, you can see it down in front. I hope to find those pictures for you.
But Glamorgan Street was there?
Yes.
What was it called then?
It was called Glamorgan, and he put it in because in the back of the castle, first of all, the garage was at the end of the driveway on Glamorgan. That was the garage. The cars were in there. And then on down the street, behind the castle, was a farm. There was a greenhouse, then there was a house, and a carriage house, and a barn. And they raised fruits and vegetables and so forth.
This is about where the high school is now?
Yes. The carriage house stood about where the Elks parking lot is, and the house was about where the Elks is now, in the barn. They were right in there. The house, I believe, faced Rock Hill.
But there was another house on Union Avenue.
Yeah, the little house.
And
he finally bought it.
Finally was able to buy it?
Yeah. I think he paid an awful lot for it. I think he had to buy a farm and move them out to it.
Oh, is that it?
Yes.
This was after they'd moved into
yes.
the castle?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, did he call it a castle?
No, he called it the home, the house.
The home. Mm-hmm. How did we get the name Glamorgan?
Because T.R. was from Glamorganshire, Wales.
Glamorganshire, Wales.
Yes.
And now I've heard the stories that this castle was imported from Wales.
Oh, I know.
Nothing.
Not a bit of truth in it.
Then I've heard the story that the castle is a copy of one that's in Wales.
No, it isn't. It was an original design.
It was an original
by Mr. Hirsch, yes. The
by Mr.
architect.
Hirsch in Cleveland.
That's right.
Did he do any research that you know of castles?
Oh, I suppose so. I think all architects study that sort of thing in school.
When was Stan Hewitt built? Was that before this?
I believe right around the same time.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Same area.
Most of the big houses in the country were built right in and around that same time. Mm-hmm. Up along the Hudson River, a lot of those houses were built right around the turn of the century, from 1880 to about 1910.
Now, the house was still under construction when your grandfather visited the St. Louis Exposition and
yes.
got the organ.
Yeah, there. Got the organ and he bought the marble table that's in the rotunda today there.
Oh, that table's still there.
Yeah.
That was at the exposition. You know, was it part of some particular display?
I think an Italian exhibit.
I see. And the organ?
The organ was an Aeolian, and I don't know why it was on display there, except that it was quite beautiful. He liked it. He played the organ himself.
Oh,
he liked
it. That's why he was interested mm-hmm. in it. And now you said about the college student playing it. Did you play it?
No. Played at it, but not.
Are there other wrong stories that you've heard about the castle?
Oh, I've heard an awful lot of stories about the family that have really no basis in fact at all. But as far as the house goes, except the story that persists, that it was a copy or that it was built, torn down and brought over here and rebuilt, which is nonsense because, as I say, my grandfather worked in a machine shop in Wales. I think that...
But you mean that's your great-grandfather?
Yeah, my great-grandfather.
So I've got to keep these straight.
I know.
T.R.
was an amazing man for his time. In the length of time that he lived in Alliance, before he died, he had a tremendous impact on this town. Just enormous. He brought in American Steel Foundry, and I believe another one of the big plants in town. I have all this material. I have to find it someplace.
Well, I certainly would appreciate it.
He was on the board at Mount Union College. He was president of the Board of Trustees up there. When he died, the whole town shut down, and the funeral procession included all the students from the faculty from Mount Union College. They marched from the square downtown out to the city cemetery, and the procession was so long that when the hearse got to the cemetery, the end of it hadn't left the square yet.
Oh my God.
The entire town really turned out for
him.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
He was much loved and apparently tremendously honored. He had been a friend of William McKinley's, who wrote that address, which is on the monument that's out in front of the castle now.
Oh, yes. It's
and that was an excerpt from a speech he wrote in which he talks about his friend T.R. Morgan.
Is the name Reese carried through in any of the family names?
Yes, I think, no, because we had very few children, unfortunately. But there was Tom Jr., and then his son, Tom III. Now, that's as far as I know. They were the ones that were in Chicago and then later in New York.
And you?
I have no idea what became of them.
All right. Did any of the family ever come back to see the castle, any of these that had sold out?
There was such bitterness at the time that they instituted the lawsuit to contest T.R.'s will.
But they
never spoke again, no. They lost it, and there was tremendous bitterness. And as far as I know, there was little, if any, contact. I know that I met Arthur Morgan one time at a meeting in Pittsburgh, and my father mentioned that it was his uncle, and that was the first and only time I'd ever even heard of him.
In the building of the house with the stone cut from Vermont, as your father says.
Yes.
All of it?
Yes.
The marble?
Mm-hmm. Except, as I told you, the foundation brick came out of these clay pits that were the basis of the lake, that northernmost lake.
Did you have any personal, or do you have any personal thoughts now about the sale in 39 or the acquisition of it by the schools?
Well, my grandmother was desperate to get out of it. She stayed in there primarily because she thought that my father would eventually like to live there. But in 1939, with war imminent in all of Europe, she'd lived there during World War I, and she said she would not live in that house during another war.
Oh.
She said there was little coal and a shortage of help, and she was just more than she was going to put up with. So she told Dad she wanted to move out and move to Cleveland, and would he move in? Dad said he didn't want to live there. He never had wanted to live there and wasn't going to live there. And they got in quite a hassle over it. I know she was just furious because she'd stayed all those years thinking he would like to have it. So she put it on the market. And I would imagine that was probably about 1937, late in 37. And in 1938, there were no takers. She had decided a Catholic girls' school was very interested in it. And she decided that she would give it to them for a school. But after consideration, they decided that they wouldn't be able to afford the upkeep on it, and they turned it down. So in 39, she negotiated with a wrecking crew to come in and tear the house down.
Is that so?
We were going to sell the lots off. And at the last minute, the Elks Club decided that they might be able to swing it. They were definitely interested in it. I believe that probably the guiding light there was Murray Rue, Sr. He worked at Morgan Engineering, and he was a pretty good friend of my dad. And Murray talked about it to the Elks, and they finally decided that they'd like to take a whirl at it. So she sold it to them for $25,000, and they were able to run it.
And then Merrick Lewis purchased it.
Yes.
And he put a tremendous amount of money back into it, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
That is, there were major repairs?
No, he only made one major repair to the structure itself. And that was in the north wall in the living room. It was about to fall down. Yeah. There was a lot of trouble there. The stones hadn't been pointed for years.
But the furnishings in the castle now, what ones are there, that is, like in the living room, for example, were they from Merrick Lewis?
Yes.
Yes.
The only thing that's in there, that was in there when we had it, is the table in the rotunda, the marble table. And when we lived there, it was turned the other way.
What do you mean, turned?
It.
Oh, you mean the length and width of it?
Yes,
turned around? Right.
It's turned.
All right. Well, now I can recall, you know, when the schools acquired it, I was on the school board.
Yeah.
And I can recall the sequence of events there was that Eric Johannesson was able to get that on that historic list, which then made it eligible. We made it eligible for some funding. But I can recall that there was a motel that had at least expressed some interest in the total land.
Yeah. I
and,
heard that.
When I heard that, I was quite alarmed because I figured that what they'd probably do is is put on a couple of straight line roofs and mm-hmm. sides, make a couple of shoeboxes, one on each end maybe, and would spoil the whole architectural significance of it, which is so distinctive.
Oh, definitely.
And is grateful the way that it turned out. And of course, to have it so that the public not only can appreciate it from a distance as they drive by, but certainly anybody who really wants to walk in can walk in.
Well, some years back, I toured a lot of the big homes up on the Hudson in New York. And I really didn't appreciate what we had in Alliance until that time. And since then, I realized what a treasure that place is. It would be tragic to see it either changed in any way or else torn down, because it really is a treasure. It's a beautiful place.
So you didn't know how
no,
it was when you were
I didn't there. Realize how exquisite it was. Now, I'll tell you the thing that really impressed me. I don't know whether it's the Ogden Mills estate up there or the Vanderbilt estate. I believe it's the Vanderbilt house up on the Hudson. And they have a library up there of Circassian walnut. And they're very proud of that. That's one of the things the guides tell you all about, is this magnificent Circassian walnut. Well, the whole rotunda was all Circassian walnut in the castle. And this, a great many of the pieces had been carved in the grape design, just beautifully done. Unfortunately, most of it was demolished in the fire in 1940. That took it out of there, but there still is enough walnut in there that you can see how gorgeous it is. Now, I had no idea how valuable and rare this was until I toured this house up on the Hudson. But I also see other things that they talked about in some of those houses. We had indirect lighting. It's probably the earliest application of indirect lighting ever used is in that house.
Oh, is that so?
And that's in the dining room, the recessed lighting, and around the top and roof.
Now, which one was the dining room?
The round room opposite the front door, good back. It's a circular room.
Back of the stairway?
No, that was the breakfast room. That was in Chinese Chippendale originally. This is the one that's opposite the front door, down the hallway, the end of the hall.
Oh, clear down, yes. Mm-hmm. That's,
it's now, I believe it's the superintendent's office.
Yes, all right. And then that room that extends out from the circular area.
Yeah, that was a solarium. Had plants.
That was there right from the beginning.
Yes, uh-huh.
You had plants in there.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that Rathskeller used?
It was never really used. My grandfather was a teetotaler. My grandmother drank some socially, but my grandfather didn't, although he served it. But it was never used. We never had a wine cellar or anything else down there. It was just a cute little room. Had some pretty tables and chairs in it, which are downstairs. And we never used it. I don't think they used it at all, to tell you the truth. Now, we used the swimming pool a lot.
I was going to ask about that now.
Oh, we used it an awful lot, and we used the bowling alleys a lot, too.
Did you use the swimming pool in the wintertime?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was cold, but we used it.
You were there in the 30s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was the water wasn't heated?
No.
And the bowling alleys also used?
You could put hot water in the pool. There was a spigot, you know, hot water, and you could add hot water to it till it was a reasonable temperature to swim.
Did you have a lot of friends come in and go swimming
mm-hmm.
with you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we swam a lot.
Did their parents come?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep.
So did you have parties there?
Oh, yeah, we had wonderful parties there. In the bowling alley, at the end of it, there was a billiard table, and then next to it was a big swing set, like you'd have outdoors. I had it inside there.
You had inside.
And I played down there.
My goodness. Any other recollections of how it looked, how it appeared to you, or what was in any of the rooms?
Well, in the basement, the rooms off of the bowling alley were strictly basement. One was a big wood storage area that has an outside door next to the rotunda, right next to the rotunda. Comes out near that garden there. That was a wood storage room. One whole side of that was like bins with wood in them for the fireplaces, of which there was one in just about every room in the house.
including the bedrooms upstairs.
Yes. And then the room next to that was the furnace room. I knew it was strictly utilitarian. There was a very, very large coal room, as you can imagine.
Yeah, with the whole train load. You said two cars?
Two train car loads. They brought it in twice in the winter. They would bring it twice.
One carload each time.
One carload each time.
Now, how'd they bring it in?
They brought it into Morgan Engineering, and then the trucks brought it up from Morgan's. And then, the other room in the basement was the laundry room, which Merrick Lewis turned into a gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And that was a laundry. And then there was the machinery for the elevator, which is still there, and, of course, the machinery for the dumbwaiter, which is also still there. And that took care of the basement. Then upstairs we had the kitchen, which is very large. And there's a hallway off the kitchen that went back to the maid's dining room. And it was half sitting room, half dining room. It's been paneled since, and for some reason it's considerably smaller than it was. They brought the walls in on it. There was an upright piano in there and some easy chairs and stuff. And then there was the breakfast room. It was a pantry in the breakfast room, which was under the stairway. We ate all our meals there. And then the big dining room, which was on the other side, and there was a pantry for it, too.
But you didn't use that except when all those friends came.
Yeah. The table was round. The table
in the pantry?
In the dining room.
The main dining room.
The table was round, and it was carved oak with the grape design on it. It was made for the room. And there were 14 chairs, and the table opened up to seat 14.
Where we say it was made specially, do you know?